Welcome to International Focus. This is another in a series of VOA programs that examine conflict, peacemaking, and human nature in your neighborhood and around the world. In the following report, hosted by Adam Phillips, we explore the basic questions concerning conflict resolution as a field and talk about our reasons for broadcasting a series about it.
Whatever is at stake, a principle, a plot of land, or even a simple desire for revenge, conflict is an everyday fact in human life, and it always has been. There is conflict between individuals, among ethnic and religious groups, conflict among nations, conflict between global regions like East and West, and conflict between people over ideas or philosophies like democracy and Marxism. When conflict arises, violence is often the first response a person thinks of. But Robert Manoff, the director of the Center for War, Peace, and the News Media at New York University, says that acts of force should really be a last resort.
Violence per se, except in the presence of undoubted evil, is an unacceptable alternative. Of course, people have the propensity, unfortunately, to define almost anything as evil and therefore to justify a great deal of violence. That's a very bad solution. The range of acceptable circumstances when violence can be used should be narrowed, not broadened. And that, in fact, seems to be one of the major moral tasks of the human race right now. And if you do narrow down the circle of circumstances in which violence is legitimate, you're left with the problem of resolving conflicts so that the people can go on with the business of living and prospering and improving themselves and their cultures and societies.
Conflict resolution is the generic name for a burgeoning new field that attempts to settle disputes in ways that are less brutal, more effective, and longer lasting than violence. Borrowing from fields as diverse as psychology, diplomacy, sociology, theology, and medicine, conflict resolution has developed a wide range of methods that have been applied in a wide range of the world's trouble spots, from the ethnically cleansed villages of Bosnia to the religious disputes of the Middle East, and from the black neighborhoods of America's inner cities to the divorce courts in America's white middle-class suburbs. Robert Manoff is convinced that conflict resolution represents a powerful tool for dealing with disputes before they escalate into bloodshed and to halt the suffering that conflict has already caused.
I'm not convinced that it's necessarily the final tool, the ultimate tool. It is, however, one that has been, shall we say, cooking on the back burner for several decades now. And there are a lot of people who've done a lot of thinking about how you try to get people to work together who fundamentally don't want to.
It is the purpose of this new Voice of America series to examine the best thinking in the conflict resolution field and to explore ways that conflict resolution methods are being applied in specific conflicts or could be applied in other scenarios. Joseph Monfil is the director of the Program for Preventive Diplomacy at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington, D.C.
It's a creative contribution and the use of broadcasting. It's something that communities inevitably will welcome because the greatest advocates of conflict resolution are those who are suffering from conflict. Come and help us, they say, and we'll cooperate as much as we can. And that is why VOA's initiative is so important, because people can freely choose and make up their mind to support peace processes if they are given options, if they're given information, if they're given analyses that helps them to make their choices.
Most conflict resolution experts agree that people in conflict often undergo a psychological process of dehumanizing their adversaries. By turning enemies into something less than human, like rats or vermin, or more than human, like the incarnation of evil, slaughtering them becomes easier to justify. For this reason, conflict resolution methods often aim at rehumanizing enemies through face-to-face encounters where grievances are aired and each side acknowledges its own part in the suffering it has caused the other. According to Robert Manoff, these are exactly the sort of processes our radio series about conflict resolution can facilitate.
Radio and television and other mass media have the capacity to bring people together through their images and their voices when people, in fact, will not come together physically. And so despite themselves, they can begin to see the true humanity in other people, to begin to understand or at least hear their version of reality, how they understand life, what their goals and needs are.
Mr. Manoff adds that a series on conflict resolution could also help people caught up in conflict look at themselves and their own parts in the conflict in new ways.
Very often it will be the only voice that they will hear that will say, in effect, wait a minute, there's another way to think about this. There's maybe another way to act. Here are some people who, in fact, have done that. When, in fact, all around all around the immediate circle of the listener to a program such as this are people who will be, in fact, committed to the conflict, to perpetuating it, or to intensifying it. And radio can really say, let's put this on pause. Let's push the pause button and time out. And, there may be another way to approach this. And that power to break the spell of social reality that seems so self-evident and so obvious, and to say, no, it could be different, is extraordinarily powerful and very, very important.
Most conflict resolution experts are quick to point out that it would be unrealistic, indeed undesirable, to strive to end human conflict altogether. Eileen Babbitt of the United States Institute of Peace believes it is enough just to hope for some good.
This is not some kind of magic pill. And if you learn it and do it everywhere, always, conflicts will go away. Not the case, not at all. But I do think that there's lots of ways and mechanisms and processes that can bring people together to work through problems that ultimately result in agreements that are much more sustainable, even if they don't like each other. This is not about, you know, necessarily about people developing warm, fuzzy relationships. It is about trying to see things from other points of view and figuring out how you can achieve enough tolerance and enough working trust with other groups and other communities such that you can function and work out your differences without killing each other.
Many conflicts, from the sandlot fist fight to the deadly game of threat-counter-threat between nuclear powers, share a common pattern of escalation, stalemate, or resolution. And the pace of any given conflict is often driven by the tactical decisions the leaders of each side must make without the advantage of knowing what their adversaries are thinking or what they might do. According to Ms. Babbitt, a good conflict resolution specialist must be just as aware of the conflicts going on within the minds of the contending parties as he or she is of the outward friction between those parties. During a conflict, typical strategy worries often include questions like,
are they going to wage war? Are they going to engage in some other sort of adversarial process? Are they going to issue threats? Are they going to be conciliatory? Are they going to somehow tacitly indicate that they are ready to negotiate or not? How do they deal with their internal constituencies? These are all very important strategic decisions that parties in conflict are grappling with.
Ms. Babbitt says that it is during this process of evaluation that the idea of moving toward a real settlement to the conflict may appear.
And it can be for a whole variety of reasons. It can be because it starts to become in the interest of a particular party to accommodate or to find a solution. Or it could be because they anticipate that if they don't settle something now, the situation is going to get worse for them. But they may politically not be visibly able to do that. So what they may be willing to do instead is to engage in some kind of training process and explore what conflict resolution is.
But a wound that took a moment to inflict can take years to heal. Indeed, questions of healing are increasingly at the forefront of conflict resolution planning. The Oslo Accords, for example, were not signed by Israeli and Palestinian leaders until years of informal mid-level contacts and trust-building were behind them. Again, Eileen Babbitt of the United States Institute of Peace.
You can bring parties together in preparation for a negotiation session. You don't necessarily bring them together to negotiate and to come to an agreement, because they may be very, very, very far from ready to do that. As a matter of fact, you may spend a lot of time meeting with parties separately, because they may not be ready or interested yet in working with their counterparts or with their adversaries. So you are interested in preparing people with skills and with concepts and with a framing of approaches that gets them ready to work with their adversaries. That's one step. A second step is actually bringing the parties together in some process, which may or may not be negotiation. It may be an exploration of points of view, the outcome of which is not an agreement, but some further understanding about what needs to be done before negotiation can take place. Or it can actually be some kind of negotiation session in which options are discussed and agreements are tentatively reached.
Conflict resolution processes have been most visible in international trouble spots like Bosnia, where various non-governmental organizations are quietly promoting dialogue between ethnic groups, and the Middle East, where demobilization along the West Bank has reduced tensions and Arab-Israeli existence is being attempted. But these techniques also are being applied to good effect in some violence-prone neighborhoods of America's inner cities. Edna Povich is deputy director at the Center for Dispute Settlement, an organization that designs conflict resolution and mediation workshops for students in the Washington, D.C. school system. Ms. Povich says that in some schools, where fights over objects as seemingly trivial as radios or fancy sneakers sometimes escalate into gun violence, so-called interest-based negotiation skills can make the difference between life and death for some youngsters.
We teach listening skills, active listening, how to communicate, not being judgmental, being open-minded, and then how to identify what your interests are. We make a distinction between somebody's interests, what they really need, as opposed to their position or their previous idea for a solution to a problem. And then we teach them how to brainstorm solutions to problems with the person that they're having a difficulty with, and to select options or possibilities for solutions that satisfy both of their interests. So they come out of a dispute with a win-win solution, a solution that satisfies everybody's concerns and interests.
One powerful technique conflict resolution specialists have developed in recent years is the so-called joint problem-solving workshop. Susan Cullen-Marks is a South African conflict resolution activist and a consultant for the organization Search for Common Ground in Washington, D.C. During her nation's epic changeover from apartheid to democracy, Ms. Marks had frequent occasion to teach this alternative to violence.
Let's take a simple case of two parties, you and me, with a huge disagreement. And what we will tend to do is we will tend to fight each other. You will attack me and I will attack you. And what joint problem solving suggests is that instead of attacking each other, fighting each other, we say we have got a common problem, we have got a joint problem. Let's turn and face that problem and see how best we can resolve it. We have another saying in the business, which is hard on issues, soft on people. And what that means is we say, let's get in there and let's solve this problem with whatever it takes to solve it. But in the process of doing it, let's recognize that we are all human beings struggling, and let's treat each other with respect. The whole concept I've been talking about requires a shift in consciousness.
The spirit of mutuality in which most conflict resolution efforts are undertaken means a change in how adversaries view themselves and the claims of their enemies. Usually, adversaries in conflict tend to stick to rigid positions where they believe there is one clear aggressor, the other guy, and one clear defender, oneself. But Professor Richard Rubenstein of the Institute for Conflict Analysis and Resolution at George Mason University in Fairfax, Virginia, sees things differently. He believes that categories like us and them, right and wrong, good and bad, can depend as much upon context as upon absolutes.
It's so often the case that these charges of aggression are either trumped up or oversimplified or else even accurate, but the aggression is actually dual, that is, each side is aggressed against the other, that in order to get to the roots of the conflict, to find out what's driving it, What's motivating it? What are the unsatisfied needs? What's gone wrong with the system in which both parties operate to put them at each other's throat? And that means sitting down with both sides at the table, even though each side may consider the other vile and terroristic and aggressive and so forth. That doesn't, you know, as long as the dispute stays on that kind of level of name calling and oversimplified moralism, you never get to the causes of the conflict. And if you don't get to the cause, you can't stop it permanently.
This leads Professor Rubenstein to what are, for him, the all-important distinctions between conflict settlement, conflict management, and conflict resolution. In a managed conflict, the conflict actually continues, but its violence is controlled. In a conflict that is settled, an agreement between the parties may even have been reached, but the deeper underlying issues that caused the conflict in the first place have not been addressed. But conflict resolution, according to Mr. Rubenstein,
means getting rid of the causes on a long-term basis, and the result of that is that people relate to each other over the long run in ways which are no longer violent and destructive. A conflicted relationship is one in which one or both parties is suffering from a deprivation, very often based on the fact that some basic need that the party has is not being satisfied.
The theory of basic human needs is a cornerstone of the work of the Australian thinker John Burton, who has attempted to link his insights into conflict resolution with the scientific discoveries of psychology and the intuitive truths of religion. Joseph Montville of the Center for Strategic and International Studies is a leading proponent of the psychological and even the spiritual basis of the deep-down conflict resolution work that John Burton champions.
We have to get to the soul before you can get to yes, and that getting to the soul can be a long, painful process.
From his decades of experience as a Foreign Service officer, Mr. Montville is convinced that something far less tangible than a treaty signature is necessary before the hatchet can truly be buried and true reconciliation can begin.
Beyond the basic needs for shelter, for food, for clothing, and basic physical protection from external threats, whether they're wild animals or other people, there are human needs for dignity, for recognition, acceptance, and respect. And there are also needs for actualization or self-fulfillment. The frustration of those needs also definitely leads to conflict. You can have a settlement, you can have a deal, because one side is stronger than the other and the other one decided it's going to lose more by not surrendering. But they will remember that they were forced to surrender. And because there's been no reconciliation, they will bide their time to take revenge.
How do those who would promote peace get enemies to talk to each other and realize their essential stake in the process of dialogue? Is violence rooted in external issues like social and economic injustice, or does it originate in the individual mind? What are conflict resolution workers actually doing to promote peace in the world's many trouble spots? Perhaps the question we need to ask most of all is, what can each of us do to apply the insights of conflict resolution to our own personal lives and to the news that we hear? In the coming months, the Voice of America will continue to explore these and other issues that affect us all.
You have been listening to International Focus on the Voice of America. This week's program on the conflict resolution field was written and hosted by Adam Phillips, directed and produced by Bob Doty.